Thank you for downloading this episode of our podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast for Solomon Staircase Masonic Lodge number 357, where we talk about all things related with Freemasonry, including Hermetic teachings, philosophy, reason, spirituality, and much more. We're located in Buena Park, Southern California. Tune in as we continue to update our podcast with informative talks and articles for Masons worldwide and those who would like to inquire within.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whatever it may be for you. Today we are going to get back into Mackey's Revised History of Freemasonry, starting with Chapter 62, The Cathedral of Strasbourg and its Stonemasons. The Abbe Philip Andrew Grandidier was a learned historian and canon of the great choir of the Cathedral of Strasbourg. He wrote several historical works on Alsatia and Strasbourg, where he was born in 1752. Among them were historical and typographical essays on the Cathedral Church of Strasbourg. His attention to the antiquities of his native city, though not a Freemason, his learning, his impartiality, and his abundant opportunities of acquiring information give no little authority to what he said of German Freemasonry. He wrote a letter in 1778 to Madame d'Ormoy, which first appeared the following year in the Journal de Nancy, and copied 10 years afterward in the Marquis de Luchet's Essay sur la secte des Illuminés, has been repeated in French, German, and English, in Masonic books and magazines. This letter developed and made the frame of a narrative he embodied in his historical essays, published 4 years later. Here he presents a theory on the origin of Freemasonry, which, notwithstanding Dr. Krauss's criticism, has been accepted by several Masonic historians. The statement of the Abbe Grandidier is very interesting. It is here presented as a foretaste of what we shall say later in this chapter, with some reserve on the same subject. The Abbe says, "Opposite to the church and the episcopal palace is a building appendant to the cathedral and the chapel of St. Catherine, which serves as a Maurerhof, or workshop, of the masons and stonecutters of the cathedral. This workshop is the origin of an ancient fraternity of Freemasons of Germany. The Cathedral Church of Strasbourg, and especially its tower, begun in 1277 by the architect Erwin of Steinbach, is a masterpiece of Gothic architecture. The building is perfect and worthy of all admiration, since there is not its equal in the world. The foundation was built with such solidity that, notwithstanding the apparent fragility of its openwork, it has had to the present day resisted storms and earthquakes. The tower of the cathedral was finished in 1439. This noble work spread far and wide the reputation of the stonemasons of Strasbourg. The Duke of Milan, in 1479, wrote to the magistrates of Strasbourg, asking for a person capable of directing the construction of a superb church in his own capital. Vienna, Cologne, Zurich, Freiburg, and Landshut constructed towers in imitation of that of Strasbourg, but they did not equal it in height, in beauty, or in delicacy. The Freemasons of those structures spread over Germany, and their name soon became famous." He quotes Jacobus Wimfelingius, who lived near the end of the 15th century, as saying that the Germans are the most excellent architects, and that Aeneas Sylvius declared that in architecture they excelled all other nations. To distinguish themselves from the common craft, they formed associations named Hütten, signifying lodges. These agreed to recognize the superiority of that of Strasbourg, which was called the Hofhütten, or Grand Lodge. Later on, the project was conceived of forming, out of these associations, a single society for the whole of Germany, but it was not developed until 13 years after the building of the Tower of Strasbourg. Jodok, or Jos Dotzinger of Worms, who succeeded John Holtz in 1449 as architect of the cathedral, formed in 1452 a single body of all the master masons in Germany. He gave them a word and sign to recognize members of their fraternity. The masters of lodges met at Ratisbon on April 25, 1459, and drew up their first statutes. This assembly made Jos Dotzinger and each of his successors, by virtue of the office of architect of the Cathedral of Strasbourg, grand masters in Germany of the general fraternity. The second and third general assemblies of lodges were held at Speyer on April 9, 1464, and April 23, 1469. the constitutions were confirmed, and it was enacted that a provincial chapter should annually be held in each district. John Hammerer, who lived in 1486, and James of Landshut, who died in 1495, succeeded Jost Dötzinger as architect of the Cathedral of Strasbourg and Grand Master of the Freemasons of Germany. Conrad Wacht, who succeeded them, obtained from the Emperor Maximilian I the confirmation of their institution and of the statutes of the lodges. The diploma of this prince is dated at Strasbourg, October 3, 1498. Charles V and Ferdinand I and their successors renewed these privileges. This fraternity of masters, companions, and apprentices, in German Meister, Gesellen, and Diener, formed a jurisdiction independent of other societies of Freemasons. The Society of Strasbourg embraced all Germany. It held its tribunal in the Lodge of Mauerhof and judged without appeal all cases brought before it, according to the rules of the fraternity. The inhabitants of Strasbourg submitted to it all disputes about building. In 1461, the magistracy entrusted to it the entire care of such cases, and in the same year laid down the forms and laws which it should observe, and this privilege was renewed in 1490. The judgments it gave were called Hüttenbrief, or Lodge Letters. The city archives are full of such documents, and there are a few old families in Strasbourg which have not preserved some of them. But its jurisdiction has been much diminished, especially since 1620, when the magistracy took from the Lodge of Strasbourg the inspection of buildings. This suppression resulted from the abuse of its authority by the Lodge. The constitutions of the Freemasons of Germany, at first limited to 13, were afterwards extended to 78 regulations. These were renewed and amended by the General Assembly of the Grand Lodge, August 24, 1563, at Basel, and on the 29th of the following September at Strasbourg. 72 masters and 30 companions were present at this assembly, presided over by Mark Schau, the architect of the cathedral. 22 lodges directly depended on the Grand Lodge of Strasbourg. The lodges of the Freemasons of Swabia, Hesse, Bavaria, Franconia, Westphalia, Saxe, Misnia, Thuringia, and of the countries along the river Moselle, as far as the frontiers of Italy, acknowledged the authority of the one Grand Lodge. Early in the 18th century, the Master Masons of Strasbourg Cathedral imposed a fine on the lodges of Dresden and Nuremberg, and the fine was paid. But by an edict of the Imperial Diet of Ratisbon, the correspondence of the Grand Lodge of Strasbourg with the lodges of Germany was forbidden. The Grand Lodge of St. Stephen of Vienna, which founded the lodges of Austria, of Hungary, of Styria, and of all the countries near the Danube, the Grand Lodge of Cologne, controlling the places on the west bank of the Rhine, that of Zurich, governing the lodges of Bern, of Lucerne, of Schaffhausen, of St. Gall, and of the cantons of Switzerland, all these submitted important matters to the Mother Lodge of Strasbourg. Members of this society held no communication with Masons who knew only the use of mortar and trowel. The erection of buildings and the cutting of stone constituted their principal labor. They regarded their art as far superior to that of other Masons. The square, the level, and the compasses became their symbols. Resolved to form a body distinct from all other workmen, they invented private words and groups for mutual recognition. These they called the Wortzeichen, or word sign, the Gruß, or salute, and the Handschenk, or grip. Apprentices, companions, and masters were received with certain secret ceremonies. The apprentice, when he was advanced to the degree, took an oath never to reveal by mouth or writing the secret words. The masters, as well as the companions, were forbidden to divulge to strangers the statutes. It was the duty of every master of a lodge carefully to preserve the book of the society, so that no one should copy any of the rules. He had the right to judge and punish the masters, companions, and apprentices of his lodge. The apprentice, desiring to become a companion, had to be proposed by a master who bore witness of his life and manners. A companion was subject to the master for the time fixed by the statutes, which was from 5 to 7 years. Then he might be admitted as a master. Those who did not fulfill their religious duties, who gave free rein to immoral desires, or were lax Christians, or known to be unfaithful husbands, were not received into the society, or were expelled from it. And all masters and companions were forbidden any fellowship with them. No companion could leave the lodge or speak there without permission of the master. Every lodge had a chest where the money given by masters and companions at their reception was deposited. This money was used for the relief of poor or sick brethren. The Abbé Grandidier thinks that in these traits we may recognize the Freemasons of modern times. In fact, he says that the resemblance or analogy is plain and the allegory exact. There is the same name of lodges for their places of meeting, the same order in their distribution, the same division into masters, companions, and apprentices. Both are presided over by a grand master. Both have particular signs, secret laws, and statutes against profanes. In truth, they may say to each other, "My brethren and my companions know me for a Freemason." For so much are we indebted to the Abbe Grandidier, the Abbe has been supposed to be the first writer treating of the Strasbourg Freemasons as a fraternity. Such is not the fact. Nearly 30 years before the publication of the Journal de Nancy, of his letter to Madame d'Orme, attention had been called to this subject by John Daniel Schopflin, whose work Alsatia Illustrated first appeared at Colmar in 1751. Schopflin, who died in 1771, had been for 50 years professor of history in the Protestant University of Strasbourg. He gives an account of the Freemasons of Strasbourg, to which Grandidier must have been indebted for much that was written by the latter. The following fragment is translated from the Alsatia Illustrated of Schopflin, that the reader may compare the two accounts. Quote, "Some notice must be taken of the singular institution of the Freemasons of Strasbourg, who formerly held not the lowest place in the city, and at this day of all the Freemasons of Germany occupy the highest. The construction of the magnificent cathedral, and especially of its tower, spread afar the fame of the Freemasons of the city and excited emulation among other German craftsmen. Vienna and Cologne erected towers after the model of that of Strasbourg, and the associations of workmen and the workshops of those cities were preeminent. To these, Zurich was added, with which Cologne was soon joined. On these principal workshops, called tabernacles or lodges, depended from olden time in all the rest of the cities of Germany. In former times, there was a long deliberation at Strasbourg, Speyer, and other cities on the forming of a common society of all the stonemasons. Finally, at Ratisbon on St. Mark's Day, which is April 25th, 1459, was instituted that great society under the name of a fraternity, of which the master of the work at the Cathedral of Strasbourg was to be always installed the presiding officer. This institution, having been for a long time neglected, the Emperor Maximilian I confirmed it at Strasbourg by a solemn charter in 1498. This charter was renewed by Charles V, Ferdinand I, and by others. In the lodge tribunal, the masters and their companions sat and judged causes and pronounced sentences according to the statutes without appeal. The authority of this tribunal was acknowledged by the Freemasons of Saxony, Thuringia, Westphalia, Hesse, Franconia, Bavaria, Swabia, and all the region of the Moselle, the lodge at Vienna, from which those of Styria and Hungary are derived, and of Zurich, under which are those of Switzerland, in all grave disputes resort to the lodge of Strasbourg as to a mother. All members of the fraternity have a secret watchword. We know that the Society of Stonemasons throughout Europe has this form and origin. There is the same division of the order into lodges, masters of lodges, companions, and apprentices. There are all the same laws and secret words. A grand master presides over all. The stonecutters have a dislike to the common tribe of Freemasons enrolled with them, because they think, and not unjustly, that their art of stonecutting is far above the craft of the operative workmen. The citizens of Strasbourg often submitted questions concerning building to the judgment of the lodge. Therefore, the magistracy in 1461 committed to it the power of deciding on building matters, and prepared certain laws for this purpose. To these officers was added a scribe skilled in the law. As in the course of time this privilege became abused, it was withdrawn in 1620 and given to a smaller court. And that ends the quote. The reader may now compare the two accounts, that of Grandidier with that of Schopflin. The former is in the letter of 1778 and in the essays of 1782. The latter was published in 1751. Grandidier has taken almost his very language from Schopflin, if they did not both borrow from Father Laguille. Grandidier and Schopflin were men of learning, both were natives and residents of Strasbourg, and both gave devoted study to the antiquities of that city and of the province of Alsace-Lorraine. We may therefore accept what they have said of the Freemasons of Strasbourg and their connection with the cathedral as authentic facts. They are supported by other documents to which both writers refer. Grandidier, however, fell into one error which Schopflin escaped, and which is probably due to the fact of his being a profane and not therefore aware of the difference in detail between operative and speculative Freemasonry. He says that the customs of the two bodies of builders, with whose existence at Strasbourg he was acquainted, show some analogy or likeness between the stonemasons of Strasbourg, whose association he supposes to have been founded in 1459, and the more modern order that came over from England near the middle of the 18th century, but he is blind to the historical connection that can easily be traced between them. While he gives a greater antiquity to the old association of Strasbourg operative Freemasons than to the recent one of the speculative Freemasons, he does not realize that the latter was merely an offshoot of the medieval system of the traveling Freemasons from whom both descended. He who would write a true history of the rise and progress of the German Steinmetzen must carefully avoid this error. Evidently, there have been three distinct periods in the history of Freemasonry in Germany. The first period, beginning with the introduction of architecture into Germany, from Gaul and from Italy, extends to the 12th century. Of this period, we have no documentary evidence of the organization of a fraternity, but we know from their works that during that time there were architects and builders of great skill, and we have every right to suppose that the feudal system had the same effect upon the Freemasons as it had upon other crafts, in giving rise to the formation of protective guilds. The effect of the feudal system in the Middle Ages was to concentrate power in the hands of the nobles and to deprive the people of their just rights. The natural result of all oppression is to awaken the downtrodden to a sense of the wrong endured and to plan for relief even before the oppressor seems aware of his injustice. Therefore, the people came together by the bond of a common oppression to secure by their combination the undoubted rights which should never have been denied them. Thus it was that the butchers, the bakers, the brewers of the town met secretly together and swore to one another on the Gospels to defend their meat, their bread, and their beer. Doubtless, the Freemasons followed the example of the butchers, the brewers, and the bakers, although, as Findel justly remarks, we have no constitutions to prove the existence of such associations. Those who were freeborn, of good manners, and skilled in their craft, it is reasonable to suppose, entered into associations whose members were governed by a common obligation and formed a common brotherhood. The history of this period in German Freemasonry has been discussed in the preceding chapter. The second period begins with the organization of the corporations of Freemasons at the building of the cathedrals of Cologne and Strasbourg. Some writers think this took place even earlier. The third period commences with the introduction of speculative Freemasonry into Germany in the 18th century by a favor of the Grand Lodge of England at London. The second period only has our attention in the present chapter. It has been very generally believed that this second period, the period marked by a well-defined organization of the craft, dates its origin from the time when that style of architecture known as the Gothic began to flourish. With this style, the high-pitched gable or roof elevation and the pointed arch took the place of the low, flat gable and the semicircular arch which had hitherto prevailed. Of this architecture, much has been written by the ablest professional pens, and much as to its history and its character has been left undetermined. When was it first known, and when did it cease to thrive? Who was its inventor? These are questions no qualified school of architects has yet been able to answer with complete satisfaction, either to the speaker or hearer. One thing, however, we do know with full confidence, and this is that it was the style universally practiced by the Freemasons of the Middle Ages throughout Europe, having been introduced about the end of the 12th and the beginning of the 13th century. We have also the tradition, perhaps it is not altogether mere tradition, that these Freemasons, traveling from country to country and planting everywhere the almost divine principles of their symbolic art, were really the inventors of Gothic architecture. But, be that as it may, the memorials of these arts in the massive buildings they erected have so cemented the history of Gothic architecture with that of Freemasonry in the Middle Ages that it is impossible in any treatise on the latter subject to overlook the former. The spirit of the Middle Ages, says C.W.F. von Schlegel, in his History of Ancient and Modern Literature, especially as it developed in Germany, is in nothing so impressively manifested as in that style of architecture called the Gothic. The real inventors of this style are unknown to us, yet we may be assured that it did not start from one master mind, or else his name would certainly have been transmitted to us. The master artificers who produced those astonishing works appear rather to have formed a particular society or corporation, which sent out its members through diverse countries. Let them, however, have been who they may, they did more than merely rear stone on stone, for in doing so they arrived at expressing bold and mighty thoughts. Paley expresses a like opinion when he says that medieval architecture, by which he means the Gothic, was not a mere result of piling together stone and timber by mechanical cunning and ingenious device. It was the visible embodying of the highest feelings of adoration and worship and holy abstraction, the expression of a sense which must have a language of its own, and which could have utterance in no worthier or more significant way. This symbolic style, in which the stone cutter became not only the builder of churches, but the preacher to their congregations, and in which they were literally sermons on stones, was gradually developed by the skill of the Freemasons, and flourished from about the middle of the 12th to the middle of the 16th century. These are Paley's dates, but Moyer gives the style a greater extent and an earlier origin, though he confines the true Gothic within the limits of four centuries, as does Paley. Moyer says that the various styles of building which appeared in Europe after the decay of Roman architecture, and continued till the 16th century, when they were set aside by the modern Greco-Roman art, were all there for a long time classified under the general name of Gothic. This term was afterward applied to the pointed arch style favored in the 13th century. The invention of this style, so expressive in all its uses of a profound thought, has been credited to the medieval fraternity of Freemasons. If this hypothesis be correct, of which there can scarcely be a doubt, then that invention was probably made, or at least perfected, after the Freemasons had released themselves from church control, and, withdrawing from the monks in the monasteries, had become an independent order. If we consider, says Boisseret, the impetus given in the 13th century by the wealth and the liberty of the cities to commerce, to industry, and to the arts, we will readily comprehend that it is in the class of citizens, and not in that of the clergy, that we are to look for the inventors of the admirable architecture which was consecrated to divine worship. Notwithstanding all the great and useful things that the clergy have done for literature and science, they have been deficient in that liberty which comes from an active life in the world, and which is a necessary element in the elevation of the arts, as well as that of poetry. In this medieval life, religion was a dominant, probably the dominant factor, and because it laid such hold upon the daily lives of the people, and was so incorporated with their every thought and act, it was possible to build those great cathedrals that make beautiful every district of England. Once grasped this point of view of the medieval mind, and it becomes at once apparent how it was possible to erect those giant churches, the building of which was not at all a matter of priestly coercion, but a spontaneous act of the multitude, actually loving in a personal way that God to whom they believed they were indebted for such pleasures as they had, and whom, frankly, they wished to incline to further favors by propitiatory gifts. Moreover, every man possesses, latent or otherwise, the sense of beauty and a desire for its expression. To the peasant of the Middle Ages, religion was the only means through which this expression could be made. It was all of the beauty that came into his life. The service was beautiful, the vestments and utensils of worship were beautiful, and the house where worship had its home was to be made beautiful by his help, and it thereupon became in a measure his, for he had contributed to its beauty. Not unnaturally has a great English prelate called this the golden age of English churchmanship, because clearly it was the age of faith with works. Let the reader carefully consider the two avenues of study bearing upon the invention of the Gothic type of building. Did the inspiration as from some deep well of truth spring up and flow free and sparkling to crystallize in these enduring monuments of religious expression in gloriously carved stone? Or was it the impress and action from the higher placed ones of the church's own official family filtering down to the multitude with instructions that the latter followed blindly because they lacked skill to do more than obey? We prefer the former of these viewpoints. Rather would we conclude that all of those Freemasons engaged in the work found a holy joy, an onward spirit-stirring urge only satisfied by fullest self-expression, the recording in stone of the innermost promptings of the soul, the heart's desire made manifest, the faith artistically visible, weighty, and blessed. Such craftsmen needed not the spur, the rein was ample. Theirs was not a worship of idle promise, but the praise and prayer of performance. Thus the new style, the invention of the Freemasons after their freedom from the control of the church, prevailed at the same time in all the countries of Europe. In Germany, the two most celebrated instances were the cathedrals of Cologne and Strasbourg. Each of these cities has been claimed by various authors as the birthplace of German Freemasonry in its guild or corporate form. What has been said by Schopflin and Grandidier in reference to these claims of Strasbourg to be the center whence Freemasonry sprung in the 13th century has been heretofore shown. For Cologne, these claims are equally strong, although not so conclusively expressed, nor has it furnished any documents, as Strasbourg did, of its claim to be the Masonic center of Germany. The document known as the Charter of Cologne, if it had really come from that lodge of that city, would undoubtedly have been of great value as testimony in favor of the theory that makes Cologne the seat of German Freemasonry. Unfortunately, there is now no doubt among Masonic scholars that this document is false. Boisseret, whose book on the Cologne Cathedral exhibits much research, seeks to adjust the difficulty arising from the rivalry of Cologne and Strasbourg. He says that as the city of Cologne gave the first example of a fraternity of Freemasons, the architect of the cathedral was considered the chief of all the masters and workmen of Lower Germany, just as the architect of the Cathedral of Strasbourg, which was commenced 19 years after that of Cologne, was made the chief of all the masters and workmen employed in work in the same kind of the countries between the Danube and the Moselle. Thus, he says, the lodge of stonecutters employed at the Cathedral of Cologne was the seat of the Grand Master of Lower Germany, and that of the Cathedral of Strasbourg was the seat of the Grand Master of Upper Germany. Afterward, there was established, he claims, a central mastership for all Germany, and Strasbourg, where the works were continued for a long time, disputed this preeminent position with Cologne, as Lübeck did for the Hanseatic League. According to Boisseret, there were at first two Grand Lodges, one at Cologne and one at Strasbourg, dividing the jurisdiction over Germany. That afterwards there was but a single central head for all Germany, which was claimed by both Cologne and Strasbourg. But Boisseret produces no authority to prove this statement, and we therefore must be satisfied with Strasbourg as the seat of the first known and recognized head of medieval Freemasonry in Germany. Cologne cannot be passed over in silence. Whatever may have been the authority that its lodge exercised as a Masonic power, it must at least be acknowledged that in its cathedral, the purely symbolic principles of Gothic architecture, the peculiar style of the medieval Freemasons, developed with a more profound significance than in any other building of the time. Therefore, we will devote a chapter to this truly remarkable cathedral. And that ends our chapter, so we'll pick it up again with chapter 63, The Cathedral of Cologne and the Stonemasons of Germany. As always, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a comment. We enjoy hearing from our listeners. If you really like what you heard, share this podcast with your friends and lodge members. Visit us online at solomonstaircase.org.